Okay. So this morning's schedule was compromised a little because of the big queue at the end of registration and so on. Twitter's a wonderful thing. It tries to help me sort of gauge how people are feeling. So just prior to lunch, wonderful feedback for the day so far. Thank you very much. I noticed a few people were hungry and it was approaching 1 o'clock. And if your belly works on a clock like mine, then you know, it was ready. So I wanted to sort of compromise the debate. But I've had a word with the morning speakers, four of them anyway. One's missing. Happens. Don't know where he is. So we're going to try and cram in a sort of 15 minutes Q&A debate, which we'll put the schedule back a little bit, but I think we'll be okay. And we'll try and have a longer one at the end of the day as well. But for now, we've got Sarah and Mark and Dan and Elliot joining us on stage. And we'd had lapel mics for everybody, but something to do with sound levels, so we can't do it. So we're a little limited for microphones. So Helen here will be roaming around, and I will roam around as well. Really, because this is a shorter Q&A, I think to start with, I wanted to kind of focus on some of the tweets that we received with the initials and so on. And I'll go through in order, I guess. So for Dan, in particular, I think Dan and Mark, kind of, that's all right, make sure you tag it when you put it up. Yeah, tag it, machine tag it, whatever. So we had some quite interesting questions. What was really interesting this morning, actually, was that there was more a case of lots of sound bites and so on. People just tweeting really interesting things that have been said. But there were a few questions. Overwhelmingly positive, Dan, but obviously, you know, it's a pet subject of mine in terms of how we start to define a better vocabulary and so on. And a couple of people mentioned this idea of how it happens initially because we're trying to simplify or define a language of our own. And it's not going to work because everybody is using their own sort of different definitions everywhere. But to get to the point we want to be at, people are going to go off defining different things and their own solutions and different agencies and different practitioners using different terms. So how do we do it? I mean, the point I saw was that we do it as a community, right? Not as individuals or off in our own little enclaves.
All right, it's dangerous handing me the mic first. We might use up all 15 minutes. So yeah, I think I saw that tweet as well about the it seemed like maybe it was a little bit of a contradiction about saying that all these different agencies, you know, you'll find different kind of micro vocabularies being used, different versions of our vocabulary. And then that's a bad thing because, you know, but that's, it's not really a contradiction. It is a bad thing because the language exists in various different forms because there's no consistent base for it. So everyone makes up their own way of doing it, which is a good thing because somewhere in there, there might be better ways of describing what we do, but no one's actually thinking about that on an industry basis. I think what needs to happen is that we need to be conscious and aware that this is something we need to do, that we are responsible for as a group. And if we start thinking about it and evaluating it, hey, John, thanks for joining us. Welcome. Shall we recap?
Which pub did you go to, John? Out of interest.
I should stop trying to answer questions about John's talk, John. Oh, no. So we need to start thinking about it and writing about it and talking about it. And some of that involves experimenting and coming up with your own language like I challenged you. But I think if the intent is to help come up with ideas, share them with the entire industry and try to come to a consensus and see what everyone would like to agree on from terms or phrases or whatever it is, that will result in a shared vocabulary versus the problem of this kind of just random, haphazard, different vocabulary that currently exists. It exists without it just because, well, we didn't have a word for this, so we just used it in our agency, but it never spreads outside those walls. It needs to spread. That's the point.
There's that thing as well where one thing I've always loved about the web community, especially the way people write, and we've all been kind of liberated. You can write on blogs and so on, and years of articles and this, that, and the other. It kind of falls two camps. Sometimes you get these very sort of dictatorial articles, don't you? You will never use mood boards ever again. They are bad. It's like, well, that's your opinion. So we need to kind of explore it, I guess, conversationally, rather than somebody say, this is the new word for Page. You must adopt it forthwith because I'm important. That doesn't help us. There was another good question. My phone was dying, so I didn't check what all these Twitter handles, what the real names were, but it might be Ronan. Do you feel that design terms will stick if we start to come up with these terms and start to define our vocabulary better, considering how technology moves on so fast? And in that case, do we look to something quite broad and start talking quite broad brush strokes rather than anything too specific? That's another one for you, of course, Dan, or anyone.
I can keep doing this all day.
That's it. Your page is over, Sean.
Okay, good. I think there's a separation between the speed. We have to remove ourselves from the speed at which technology moves. We're in an industry where that moves very, very quickly as far as the technology is concerned, but the language doesn't actually move that quickly. It doesn't have to. We might have to memorize a new acronym and know what it means, or a new version of this technology, or some new way that we can put these technologies together, but that's a very different thing. I think we end up using the speed of progress as an excuse to not pay much attention to it. We've got to keep up with the times. We don't have enough time to kind of slow down and consider what the repercussions might be in 10 years. We just got to keep up with it. And I don't think we need to tie all of that together. It doesn't need to be an excuse. The technology will continue to move fast. We continue to adapt to it. And then over here, we can be thinking about, okay, how have we been using this? We can think of the vocabulary in a more paced, slower way. I don't think that the vocabulary is going to need to change because of the technology. For instance, just basic design grammar and language. We use a lot of it, visual design language. We use a lot of it in the web. A lot of terminology that's been around, some of it since the 20s and 30s. Because visual design is still visual design. There might be, the vocabulary has expanded since then, but the old terms, because they were right, or at least they worked so well that there was no reason to not use them, they're still around, regardless of the technology changes. So, yeah, I think we just have to remember that they're two separate things.
Yeah, I don't think I have anything to add to that other than... I think we just always need to remember that everything's going to be in a constant state of flux, and we have these ideas about this should be this, and we may reach this this goal where we can define something as that, but ultimately it's always going to change, and that we have to kind of embrace the fact that we live in, and then we work in this community, in this industry, which is constantly in a state of flux.
I think there are terms and things that... So go on, Mark. Are you on? Number four.
Hello. Oh. I got something. Yeah, I just wanted to add one little thing about breadth. I think that the temptation is to keep up with technology. Technology moves so fast that there's tremendous pressure to feel up to date, both commercially and personally. And I think we need to kind of slow the hell down and look more broadly. I think one of the biggest mistakes anyone can make as a designer, especially, is to delve into dribble every time that we need to look for inspiration, because we start having a collective design experience, and you don't grow as a designer. As a result, we're going to end up with, we may end up with a kind of a shared design language, but will it be the right one? So I think breadth is also really important.
What?
I was just going to say that... A concrete example of evolving language for me is the way that the narrative or the stories that we tell on the web are evolving. So one example of that is that I give you an example in the talk about a site that was built purely out of data from elsewhere. So we have already established technical language for this, because we usually link to this these portions of a document with fragment identifiers. So they're fragments, these standalone pieces of data. And then HTML supports that by having tags that contain these fragments in a very kind of logical, lucid kind of way. So I think that's almost an example for me of a natural evolution in language that's actually really useful because it describes exactly what it is. And if the web evolves in the way that I think it might, which is having all this data pulled from all these different places to build stories at unique locations on our behalf, the stories are going to be fundamentally made up of fragments, sections, if you like, or articles, or whatever you have.
The point on kind of this general kind of language as well, which I think is interesting, is we probably do start in broader strokes, perhaps. As people have mentioned responsive web design a little today, something I'm a fan of. And as Mark has kind of mentioned, we've been responsive without the web for many years, but we've taken on this term which instantly resonated with us as designers, as web designers. We could understand it, and it had an elegance to it, which I really loved. It was adopted kind of, I mean, it was on a list apart and things, so it had the right platform, but almost immediately it spoke to us, and that was a term and a definition we could start using without it being too specific. I mean, some questions this morning, there were quite a few, not so much suggestions, just, and I don't think they were being kind of, tell us what the new word for page is then. It was very much kind of, we're part of this conversation, yeah, what do we call page? And I don't think anybody's saying that we can sit here and define this language kind of overnight, but we're asking the right questions. Yeah, we know that certain things to do with scrolling and pages, this idea that things don't have edges. We're beginning to think more smartly and thoughtfully about this unique thing that we do, interaction patterns and things on the web that are unique, that haven't happened before. So, but it's kind of baby steps, isn't it? But working as a community smartly, I guess. Okay, moving on a little, because we are short of time. I apologize. It's classic for Sarah. You've got four colours for love from around the world. I still feel a bit like Scylla on Blind Date. That's good. You got a lot of colours, right? You got four colours for love from around the world, and you are designing a global site. Which do you choose?
Oh, I get all the nice questions.
Gonna hit me for that later. I'm sorry. It's more maybe more of a general kind of question. How do you approach that sort of problem?
Thing. I guess. Just say red. It's all, I guess, to do with what the existing branding of the company is and stuff like that. It's all very well having different colours and cultures and things like that, but what I showed you earlier about the cancer website, we had to actually adhere to a very strict colour palette, but we had to bear in mind the whole time behind the scenes that there were certain colours that we had to steer clear from. And I think, in general, when you're designing, we can't perhaps take it too literally against every site that might be a dating site, for example, that we'd want to colour it red. So I think you have to kind of take it with a pinch of salt, but always be aware of the main keywords around the world, which is worth reading up on, like death, anything that's kind of a little bit controversial in another country, that's when you really
have
to...
There's even that thing of kind of, you know, a thumbs up in one territory means something completely different in another.
Yeah,
all
yeah.
Those kind of things.
It's just about doing a lot of research before you start on a big project or a slightly controversial subject. I think it's just about doing a lot of research, but I don't think you should take it as literal as it's probably sounded.
Yeah, classic research and just kind of don't wade into stuff and then alienate a million people in
China.
Yeah,
because I mean, there's only actually a handful of sort of keywords around the world that are actually ever going to cause you a problem. Generally, it's stuff like on that colour wheel, it shows stuff like energy, the different types. So that's sort of the stuff that's not really going to get you in trouble if in another culture, but it's just worth reading up on sort of those key elements if you are ever designing a site that's slightly bordering on like the cancer site, then it's worth definitely reading up on
the colouring culture that you mentioned.
Colouring culture, Will.
That's been tweeted and retweeted and stuff. So if you don't use Twitter, you must hate this. There's a link to what Sarah's talking about, and it's on there, and it's worth a look. I'm going to make this the last one for now. I apologise, but at least we kind of crammed this in. One from Remy Sharp, who's out there somewhere, obviously, for John. So you're probably quaking. How would you go about selecting a colour to match the mood you wanted to invoke for a product or site?
How do you go and match the colour? It's an interesting question, isn't it? I'm not sure there's a process that you could work through. I think we all have colour. I think colour is one of the hardest things to deal with ever in design. And the reason for that is because colours respond to those around them and can give completely different messages depending on the context in which they're used. So to try and, I don't think colour alone can convey an emotion. But I think what's going on is much more complex than that, isn't it? Someone in the break said to me that, you know, that lizard brain stuff, is that like when we do a design and we walk away for a day and we come back and we see it through completely different eyes? We almost fact check ourselves. And I thought that was a really great way of summing it up. Because the things that are going on are complex enough that colour is just one element of it. So if you're trying to convey a particular emotion and you choose a particular palette and choose a particular type and choose a particular layout and everything else and content, going away and coming back and see if that hits you when you flushed your personal memory cache, if it hits you in the right way, it's probably a pretty decent way to see if you're doing it right. Apart from that, I've got no process to pick out a colour, really, because I don't think I'm particularly good with colour anyway. You're probably not the best person to ask.
Okay, a round of applause for our panel. Thank you very much.